Hello and welcome to All Right, Now What? I'm your host, Andrea Gunraj, for the Canadian Women's Foundation. Gender equality and justice where we live, work, learn, and play is the goal, and it makes life better for everyone. This podcast is our chance to connect with insightful people and explore what it'll take to get there in Canada. The work of the Canadian Women's Foundation and its partners takes place on traditional First Nations, Métis, and Inuit territories. We are grateful for the opportunity to meet and work on this land. However, we recognize that land acknowledgements are not enough. We need to pursue truth, reconciliation, decolonization, and allyship in an ongoing effort to make right with all our relations.
Let's say you're walking home one night, listening to some casual Beethoven, as one does. If you're a man, there's a good chance you'll hear it just like this. If you're not a man, there's a good chance you'll hear it more like this. Because women and gender-diverse people are expected to always keep one ear to the ground to reduce their chances of being attacked. Does that sound right to you? Visit awarepod.com to learn more and help fight gender-based violence.
Today I'm speaking with Alicia Torrey.
My first question for you, I'd like to ask, what kind of gender equality change maker are you? You did the quiz. Give me a sense of your reaction.
So, surprisingly, I got a bit of connector and collaborator more over challenger and creator. And I was honestly very surprised because based on like my advocacy work or just the podcast that I do or like social media infographics, I see myself more of a challenger and creator. So I think it was just nice to put into perspective that, you know, as change makers, sometimes we are better judges of like what is happening in society and what we can do to make it better. So I feel like this quiz really helped me look inward and just kind of recognize my gifts and my skill set on a personal level. So it was nice to know that.
So funny to hear that because I've heard other people have a very similar reaction. I thought I was this big challenger and I realized that actually I'm a connector or I'm a collaborator. It's so interesting that all these skill sets are important and challenging alone is not going to get you anywhere. You're a little bit of all of them and that's okay. So let me ask you this. I really appreciate this question because we are far more than we present in any one day. We're bringing a lot of things to the table and a lot of things to this podcast. Let me ask you, what is the core life lesson that today you bring to your effort to address gender equality and justice in Canada and in all the work you do internationally as well?
I think for me, and especially as a brown woman, I think I really advocate for intersectionality in all realms of advocacy. I think that we bring our own unique lived experience and we kind of, our voices, our experience, our struggles, they all kind of put into perspective that, you know, there is no such thing as a one-size-fits-all solution. And we kind of need more tailored efforts to achieve gender equality in all communities. So I would definitely say that at the table, there should be a seat for all of us, for each and every one of us, because we bring our own set of struggles, our own set of experience. And it is only by listening to us and what we have to bring to the table that we can get better solutions for, you know, long term and not just like band-aid solutions that may benefit others more than certain communities.
I'm curious as to, for you, when you bring intersectionality into your work, what does that look like? I'm asking this deeply because I hear a lot of people talk about intersectionality. It has become a bit of a buzzword. It's a powerful word and an important word. How does it show up in what you do and how you advocate for gender equality and advocate for the changes you know we need?
So, you know, in research, most of the data on period poverty is for white women mostly. And that does not mean that their experiences are invalid. It just means that, you know, we come from like different communities and period poverty may look different for us. For example, I grew up in a brown community where we do not necessarily talk openly about periods or sexual health and reproductive health in general. So I kind of bring that to the table and just kind of try to make a change that, you know, period poverty can also look like not having access to good comprehensive sex ed in my community. So it's more of just kind of understanding what is lacking in certain communities to achieve that gender equality. And that's how I think intersectionality comes in. It's more of understanding like what is rooted in certain communities that needs to be tackled.
Yeah, I really appreciate that perspective. And I guess silence and discrimination and oppression, they always go hand in hand. Really interesting. So I get the sense that you're very passionate about period poverty. If you can just give us a sense of what that looks like in a Canadian context.
That would definitely look like having access to period products. So on average, a Canadian will spend over $60,000 during their lifetime on period products. And a box of tampons can cost between $16 to $45 in remote Indigenous communities. And usually when I say that fact to people, their main argument to counter that fact is, well, they can just use reusable products because that means that it's just a one, you're going to buy it one time. But unfortunately, they cannot do that because we have so many boil water advisories. So that means that they cannot manage, you know, reusable period products properly. It's not possible. It's not feasible. So it definitely looks like a lack of access, lack of affordability of period products. And also there are so many pilot projects, but they're not for long-term solutions. They're just like for short-term, like 3 years, but people are going to keep menstruating, you know? So it's not like necessarily the greatest solution out there. It is a good start. I will acknowledge that, but more needs to be done. And I feel like we need to be more open talking about periods. A lot of times, especially in my advocacy, when I talk about period poverty, it is branded as a third world country problem, but that is not the case because it is very well prevalent in Canada as well. When I started distributing free period products to women's shelters or homeless shelters, I did get a few private messages of women just telling me that, you know, they were not comfortable talking about periods to their mother, but now they feel like they should be able to talk about it to, you know, their child. So I feel like it is making a difference, and there are also communities here who did not necessarily talk openly about periods to their parents. So we definitely need to work on that.
I mean, I'm curious as to what you would feel is the ultimate solution. What would end period poverty in Canada today? No matter where you live, remote, rural, urban, suburban, what would end it? And what's the goal, the North Star that you're looking at for that?
I definitely feel that period products should not be something that, you know, you have to choose whether going to school, going to work, or having or getting your period. I feel like period products should be free. It should not be a privilege. We can't control that. We get our periods every month and we don't have to be scrambling for like, oh my gosh, do I have enough money? Or does the food bank have some maybe? I don't think that's okay. We shouldn't have to be stressing about how we're going to manage our periods, about whether we're going to have to miss classes, about whether we're going to have to use socks, sleeves, or newspaper as an alternative, that which is the reality of so many people in Canada itself and not just like other countries. So for me, it's definitely like better access to period products. I don't think it should be a luxury. I think, you know, bleeding with dignity is a human right and not a privilege.
Well, I appreciate that. Bleeding with dignity, it's such a powerful way of reframing this idea of lack of access and barriers to what you need. It's clear that you're passionate about period poverty and ending the lack of access. Give me a sense of, if you had to describe your passions, how would you describe them? Maybe you would describe other things beyond period poverty. Maybe you would describe deeper places where this sits. Give me a sense.
I am super passionate about just women everywhere being able to have a right to choice. I think that, you know, we're still in a climate where we cannot necessarily talk openly or do things as we wish because there are so many restrictions. And, you know, I'm going to start off strong with an example, like our bodies should not be a political battlefield, but it's 2025 and it still is. We need to fight for, you know, bodily autonomy, and that's not okay. There are so many women before us who have worked really hard for us to be able to get a voice, to be able to get a seat at the table, but, you know, we're still not there yet. More needs to be done. And I think, Plan International Canada just kind of pointed out that it's going to take 130 years for us to reach gender equality, and it's alarming. So, you know, I'm really passionate about just using my platform, using the resources that I have, using everything that I've learned to just make sure that we all have the right to choice. That's definitely the main goal.
So you won the Feminist Creator Prize. You're one of three winners this year, and we're so proud of you. It was a delight to see you at the award ceremony, go on stage and share why this is so important with the work that you're doing and what this award means to you. Can you share with our listeners what you find this award will help you do, use your platforms better, different, wider, wilder? Give us a sense of what this award means to you and why you feel that it will give you another kind of kickstart in the direction that you want to go anyway.
I definitely feel that recognitions and awards, it just goes beyond like celebrating your grassroots or your foundation. I feel like it puts the issue on the map. It reaches a larger audience. So more people are going to learn about peer poverty. Maybe they just heard it once or twice, but they didn't necessarily like look into it further. So I feel like this kind of award, this kind of recognition, it just amplifies the issue out there. And, you know, people with different gifts, different skill sets can actually like try to learn about it and how they can use their gifts to even help us in the movement. So for me, it goes beyond recognition. It's definitely amplifying the issue and how we can all help to just kind of make lives better for everyone.
So here's the last question for you, because I think our listeners want to know, what would you recommend? A powerful takeaway, given your experiences, your activism, your work, what can they take away from you to help them in their own lives become a better gender equality and justice change maker?
As change makers, it's important to acknowledge and internalize that the world and certain people thrive on our exhaustion. Like, this is what gives them power. And we kind of, the effort that we are putting out there to make the world a better place, we need to kind of take a step back and do a bit more of like self-care and self-love for us as well. Because you can't constantly be fighting without filling your own cup. You need to like take a rest sometimes so that you can bring bigger changes. And of course, as change makers, we all have different skill sets. We can't all be at the front line of the battlefield. Some of us have to, you know, share accurate social media infographics. Some of us need to be lobbying. Some of us are probably better at speaking on different platforms about issues that they're passionate about. So I feel like it's really important to celebrate and acknowledge that as change makers, we all have different gifts. And we don't necessarily have to be doing the same thing to be called the better feminist or the better change maker. It's only as a community when we work together, we kind of use our gifts to, you know, like the full potential that we are going to be able to make better changes. So,
all right, now what? If you want to make sure no woman, girl, two-spirit, trans, or non-binary person feels out of options, out of sight, out of time, or out of mind, visit yescountmein.ca. When you count yourself in, you'll join over 104,000 people in the Canadian Women's Foundation's community. You'll get tools and opportunities to advance gender equality. This movement needs you. Visit yescountmein.ca and count yourself in today. Please listen, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. If you appreciate this content, please consider becoming a donor to the Canadian Women's Foundation. People like you will make the goal of gender equality a reality. Visit CanadianWomen.org to give today, and thank you for your support.